She dropped my arm and said, "Oh, wow." She said she'd be right back. I lay down on the table, and the next thing I remember, she was shaking my shoulder to wake me up. My mom was standing there, pressing a tissue to her lips. "I checked to see if you are pleased with all these words. You look concerned." "You know what?" I say. "I've thought about her a lot since I've been here." You tilt your head. "About, what's her name?" I say. "The substitute nurse?" "Shelley McGee." "Yeah, I've thought about sending her a postcard." You raise an eyebrow. "You know, having a wonderful time, wish you were here." "Are you?" I don't understand. "Are you having a wonderful time?" I pick a piece of fuzz off the couch, roll it between my fingers, flick it into the air. "Do you wish she was here?" "No." "Callie, let me ask you something." You sit forward in your dead cow chair. "How exactly did Shelley McGee see your scars?" "She took my pulse." "You didn't try to stop her?" A sudden heat washes over me. I can feel my cheeks reddening, my throat getting tight. I pull my arms to my sides and sit very still. "I'm glad you didn't try to stop her." Your voice comes across the space between us, gentle but sure. I take in the sight of you in your leather chair, so calm, so normal, so pretty in your long green skirt. "You don't think I'm crazy?" I laugh. You don't laugh. "You don't think I'm insane for doing this?" I hold up my arm, my sleeve pulled safely over my bandage. "No, Callie," you say matter-of-factly. "I don't think you're crazy at all." I blink. "I think you've come up with a way to deal with feelings that you find overwhelming. Overwhelmingly bad, overwhelmingly frightening." I sink back into the cushions on your couch. It occurs to me that I sit up perfectly straight the whole time I'm in here, that my back has never actually touched the back of the couch. "Really?" I say. "Really." The clock says it's time to go. "So, can you make me stop?" I say.
"Make you? No, I can't make you."
"Well, then, can you, you know, help?" You tap your lip.
"Yes," you say, "if you want to stop."
Then you stand up and say we'll talk more tomorrow. I say okay, but what I really want to say is that I'm not sure I can stop. Everyone else must still be on the smoking porch because Claire is the only one in the room when I get to group. Her glasses are in her hands and she's pinching the bridge of her nose. There are two red spots where her glasses usually sit. She looks up when she sees me at the door and smiles. I don't exactly smile back, but I don't not smile either. We sit there a while, me reviewing the new order of cars in the parking lot and Claire blowing on coffee in a paper cup until the other girls file in. The room is suddenly full of talking and laughing. Sydney is at the end of one of her stories. "That proves I'm the sanest one in the family," she says, flopping down in her chair.
"Me too,"
Tara practically cries out. Then she stops cold in the center of the circle. Amanda is back, and she's sitting in Tara's seat. Tara gives Claire a pleading look. Claire doesn't respond. Sydney pats the seat of the chair next to hers, and Tara slips in beside Sydney. Suddenly, group is a game of musical chairs. Tiffany comes in, surveys the situation, looks to Claire for help, then plunks into the nearest seat. Becca and Debbie arrive last. Becca darts into the seat next to Tara. Debbie huffs, then takes the last seat, the one next to me. I draw my arms to my side to make room for her. There's a long silence. Somebody complains about the food. Then more silence. Somebody else complains about the bathrooms, then about how nosy the attendants are. More silence. "So?" Sydney says to Amanda. "Where were you?" "When?" Sydney looks around the group for help.
"At breakfast," Tara says. "You weren't at breakfast."
Amanda smirks. "Room service." Tiffany laughs. No one else does.
Seriously, says Sydney.
You really care? Says Amanda. That's so codependent of you. Sydney looks confused, then hurt.
I was in the infirmary, Amanda says.
Really? Says Debbie.
Really, Amanda says sarcastically.
I heard you had to get a shot, Debbie says. Amanda arches an eyebrow.
Didn't they give you a sedative? Says Debbie.
Amanda laughs. Tetanus, she announces. Then she leans forward and winks at me. Right? I can't answer, but I can't stand to have everybody looking at me either. I nod. Then I go back to looking out the window and wondering whatever happened to that fly that was caught between the glass and the screen. After group, Ruby waves to me from her desk.
You have a package, she says. Priority mail.
I know as soon as I see it, it's from my mother. The mailing box is covered with cat stickers. The address is written in calligraphy. I wonder what the sick minds postman must have thought. I tuck it under my arm and start to head back to my room.
Hold on, says Ruby. You have to open that under supervision. Standard operating procedure.
Ruby uses a key to slice through the mailing tape. Inside, nestled in a sea of pink styrofoam peanuts, is a quilted calico thing. She holds it up. It's my name in puffy calico letters. On the back is a suction cup. She hands me a note that was lying among the peanuts. Dear Callie, here's a little something to brighten your room at Sea Pines. The suction cup on the back is so you can hang it on your door. I checked with the office since you girls aren't allowed to have thumbtacks. Let me know if the other girls would like them. I can make them up in a jiffy. They said you're doing better there. That's good. Get well soon. Love, Mom. I take the calico name thing and start to walk back to my room.
Wait, says Ruby. There's something else.
I try to act like I don't care what it is, like I'm not interested, like I'm not hoping for anything good, anything from my dad, as Ruby hands me a small white envelope. I know as soon as I see the front with my name in blue marker, it's from Sam. Inside is a hockey card. Not just any card, though. It's his Wayne Gretzky, his favorite. There's no note, just the card. I check to make sure no one's around. Then I hold the card up so Ruby can see. My little brother, I say. He loves hockey. She puts a hand to her chest.
That's sweet, she says. Real sweet.
I slip Wayne Gretzky into my pocket and go back to my room. Where would you like to start today, you say.
I don't care.
You cross your legs.
You decide, I say.
Okay, you say. How are you getting along with the other girls in your group?
I shrug.
Fine.
You wait.
Sydney, my roommate, she's nice, I say. So is this other girl, Tara.
You look pleased.
And Debbie, she's this very heavy girl who's kind of a know-it-all, but she's okay. She tries to take care of this other girl, Becca.
Hmm, is all you say.
I'm not sure about Becca. She got so sick from not eating she had a heart attack. She acts like she wants to get better, but...
Never mind.
I wait for you to bug me to go on. You don't. You won't tell anyone, right? I say.
Everything you say in here is confidential.
Well, she's still throwing up her food. Your expression doesn't change. And hiding food, too. She pretends to eat it, but she's really throwing it away. You uncross your legs.
How do you know?
I watch. You nod. It makes me feel sort of weird that I know what she's doing. It also makes me feel really bad for Debbie, since Debbie does nice things for her, like covering her up with a sweater when she's sleeping. Talking about Debbie and Becca and Sydney and Tara is surprisingly easy. I realize I know a lot about them.
I guess I even sort of like them. I check the clock to see how long it is till lunch. Your chair groans. But I understand from the staff here that you're not talking in group yet.
Yet. You say this like it's simple. Inevitable.
My lips are chapped. I pull the corner of my lower lip into my mouth, then bite down a little.
Can you tell me why?
I shrug for the millionth time. You tap your lip. There's this other girl, I say. She's new.
Oh?
This new girl, Amanda. She wears shorts and flip-flops. You lift an eyebrow ever so slightly. Like it's the middle of summer. There's a long, long hush. Far off, I can hear a plane boring through the sky. She does what I do. I watch for your expression to change, for there to be some slight shift from neutral to what? Disgusted? Disapproving? You wait calmly. She showed everybody her scars. I bite my lip some more. That's it. I'm finished. I listen for the plane, but it's gone.
You think she should have kept them to herself?
Huh? Do you think this new girl should have kept her scars hidden? I don't care. Then, right away, they're gross. I pull on my sleeve, pinch the fabric tight, wrap it safely around my thumb.
What's wrong with letting people know what you're doing or how you're feeling?
It's not fair, I say.
Not fair?
It might upset them. You look puzzled. Can we change the subject, I say?
Of course.
But I can't think of what to talk about. My mom sent me this name thing, I say at last. I told you she does crafts, right? You nod. She made this thing for my door. It's my name. In fabric. It's quilted. The name thing seems silly, impossible to describe.
It's a decoration, you say?
Yeah, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
My mom has to take it easy, I explain.
Yes, you say. You mentioned that before, that she needs a lot of rest.
All at once, though, I'm the one who feels tired. Exhausted, actually. Is it okay if we stop now? I say.
Yes, of course,
you say, smiling a little. Our time is just about up anyway. It's almost the end of study hall. Debbie's writing in her journal. Sydney's listening to her Walkman. Everyone else is asleep. I'm memorizing chemistry terms. Osmosis? Reverse osmosis. Sydney leans across the space between our desks, waving a folded note. She points to Tara. I know right away she wants me to pass the note to Tara. I take it without thinking. Then I see the problem. Tara is sound asleep, her head on her arms, turned away from me. I watch Tara breathing for a minute, try to decide what to do, then lean across the row and slide the note under her elbow. She doesn't move. I look over at Sydney, who's giggling silently, her hand over her mouth. The corners of my mouth turn up. I bite down on the insides of my cheeks and turn back toward Tara. I reach over and slip the note out from under Tara's elbow. She still doesn't move. Sydney is practically having a convulsion trying not to laugh. Her face is beet red. My chest feels like it's about to explode. I swallow, then burst out with a noise that sounds like air escaping from a balloon. Tara jumps. Sydney laughs out loud like this is the funniest thing she's ever seen. All I know is that my hand is shaking as I pass Tara the note.
Thanks, Sydney whispers.
Sure, I say. Sure. It's the kind of thing that comes out automatically, the kind of thing a person can say without really saying anything. I close the door to your office. Before you can ask me what I want to talk about, I show you the Wayne Gretzky card. It's Sam's favorite, I say. You smile.
You told me how much he loves those cards, you say.
I sit back on the couch. My feet stick out. I sit forward. My back gets tight.
Yeah, but he doesn't actually play. He just looks at the cards.
You nod.
He has this tabletop hockey game. I set it up for him. It has plastic players that you control with sticks, you know?
I can't tell if you understand what I'm talking about, but the words keep coming anyhow.
He got it the Christmas before last. It had about 10 pages of directions. Stuff like, put bracket X in slot Z, post Y in hole 22.
Sounds complicated, you say.
Yeah, the box said adult assembly required, but my parents were out. My mom was visiting Graham at the nursing home.
So you put it together by yourself?
No big deal. This sounds somehow like bragging, so I tell you the rest. I got mad at Sam, though. I hardly ever get mad at Sam.
You tilt your head to the side.
He put the stickers on crooked.
This sounds stupid, trivial.
The directions say that's the last thing you're supposed to do.
And that made you angry?
Maybe. A little, I say. Then, I was mean.
How were you mean?
You sound faintly disbelieving, like you can't imagine me being mean.
I yelled at him.
I check for your reaction. You just look calm, as usual.
He got sick.
I let the words fall in my lap, then look up.
You nod.
He had to go to the hospital, I say. You give me a worried look. I want to make it go away.
You know what Sam said?
He still believed in Santa. He said he was mad at Santa for not putting the hockey game together. I said maybe Santa was too busy. So Sam said, that's what he has elves for.
I smile, thinking how funny that was coming from a little kid.
You smile a little too.
I decide to tell you more.
He put the stickers on when I wasn't looking. They were all wrinkled. And he put the stickers that were supposed to go on the players' uniforms on the scoreboard. I told him he was wrecking the whole thing. He hid the rest of the stickers behind his back, and then he started to cry.
I don't check for your reaction. I keep my eyes on the rabbit and go on.
I didn't pay any attention. I kept working on the hockey game. He kept crying, though. Then he pulled on my sleeve and said he couldn't breathe. His eyes were really big, and he made this scary noise. This wet sound that came from his chest, like he was drowning from the inside.
I rip the tissue in my lap and decide to skip over the other part.
They took him to the hospital. It was after midnight when they got home.
Excuse me a minute, Callie. You're leaning forward in your chair. Who took him to the hospital?
My parents. I glance at you, then away.
So they came home?
You look confused.
Yeah.
I go on faster. It was after midnight when they got home. 12:12 in the morning. I remember. I decided that if they weren't home by 12:34, I was going to call the hospital to see if Sam was okay. You know how on a digital clock 12:34 looks like 1, 2, 3, 4? That was going to be the sign that I should call.
I don't wait to see if you understand.
But they came home, so I didn't have to.
You exhale.
My mom was upset. She wanted to know why I wasn't in bed. She said Sam was in an oxygen tent. Then she started crying, and it was like her legs gave out. She was kneeling on the floor, crying and saying, "Oh my God, oh my God." My dad had to pick her up under the arms and put her to bed.
I check the clock. Time's up somehow. I squirm around on the couch.
You don't move.
I inch to the edge of the couch.
You still don't move.
That must have been very upsetting, you say.
I stand up.
Yeah, for my mom. She told someone on the phone Sam almost died. It was after that she stopped driving and stuff.
I put my hand on the doorknob.
That's it, I say. I don't wait for you. I open the door and say, see you tomorrow.
That night, when I go to take my shower, Becca's standing at the sink wearing her puppy bathrobe and slippers. Until a while ago, I thought Becca was about my age. Then the other day in group,
When she told us they tried to force-feed her when she was in the hospital, she said they couldn't do it because she was legally an adult.
No one can tell me what to do, she said. I'm 18 years old.
She's holding a toothbrush and scowling at her reflection. Then, as if she's just remembered she was in the middle of something, she starts brushing her teeth so hard it looks like it must hurt. I head toward a sink at the other end, aware of the distinct smell of throw-up as I pass one of the stalls. Becca is spraying herself with perfume. Rochelle is oblivious. I position myself so I can see Becca in the mirror. She catches me looking at her. We lock eyes for an instant. She looks embarrassed and proud at the same time. I grab my towel, pretend I forgot something in my room, and decide to come back later. I don't have anything to say today, I say, as I sit down on your couch.
No?
No, not really.
Let me ask you something then, you say.
You don't wait to see if it's okay with me.
The time Sam got sick, when you were putting together the hockey set, is there anything else you want to tell me about it?
I study a stain on the carpet and try to decide if it's shaped like a woman with a big nose or an amoeba. It was raining, I say finally.
Anything else?
I don't take my eyes off the stain.
Nope. Well then, will you fill me in on one part I don't understand?
You keep going.
Your parents were out, as I recall. Is that right?
I don't move a muscle.
How did you let them know Sam was sick? Do you remember?
I remember exactly. I took the steps up from the basement two at a time, then ran out the front door, across the lawn, into the street. I glanced back at our house with all my mom's Christmas crafts in the windows, then tried to put on a burst of speed. I stumbled, pitched forward, and found myself kneeling by the curb. I don't remember getting up, I just remember running, watching my feet beneath me, first one, then the other, hitting the pavement as if they weren't connected to me, as if they were just appearing and disappearing to give me something to look at while I ran. I ran past the entrance to our development, out onto the main road. I must have gone past the Roy Rogers, the Dairy Queen, and the video rental place, although I don't remember going past them. I just watched my feet appear, disappear, then reappear, until somehow I was standing in front of Bud's Tavern. I shoved the door open and stepped inside, but I couldn't see a thing in the sudden dark. The place smelled like overcooked hot dogs and damp sweaters. I thought for a minute I was going to be sick. There was a man at the bar.
"Daddy!"
I said. It came out sounding babyish and a little scared. The man turned around and gave me a bored look. He wasn't my father. Another man came out of the restroom whistling.
"Daddy!"
This time it sounded babyish and a little mad. And this time, it was my father. He looked like he couldn't quite place me.
"Callie," he said, "what are you doing here?"
"It's Sam," I said, panting. "He's sick."
"You want a soda?" he said,
then turned to face the bar. His back looked enormous. When he turned around, he had a beer in his hand. He took a swallow, and I watched his Adam's apple bob up, then down.
"He's sick!"
He looked at me blankly.
"Daddy!"
I stamped my foot.
"I already called Mom at the nursing home," I said quietly. "She's on her way home."
He seemed to wake up then.
"Why didn't you say so?"
He took out his wallet, put a few bills on the counter, and grabbed his coat. Once we got in the car, I realized I was cold. Cold and wet.
"Could you put on the heat?" I said.
He didn't say anything, just flipped the heater on. It blew out cold air at first, and I had to hug my arms to my side to keep from getting even colder. When the car started to warm up, he turned the heater off, unzipped his coat, and tugged on his collar. All the things I'd passed on my way there, the fast food places, the video rental store, went by the window in slow motion. How could it take so much longer to drive home than it had to run there? But it must have just seemed slow, because we still got there before my mom did. I remember exactly,
but I don't tell you. I just sit there and stare at the stain on the carpet, until finally you sigh and say that's all the time we have for today. Something wakes me up in the middle of the night. The quiet. I sit up, listen for the squeaking of Ruby's shoes, for the sound of someone crying into a pillow, for the far-off laugh track from the attendant's TV. But for once, it's absolutely silent in here. The room is filled with a milky white glow. I sit up and see then that it's snowing. I listen to the snowflakes hitting the window, making a faint scratching sound. Then I lie down, roll over, try to go back to sleep. In the distance, car tires spin, then stop. I remember a talk show about people who had trouble falling asleep. Some expert told them to get up and read or have a glass of milk instead of trying to sleep. Still, I try to sleep. I play the inhale-exhale game. It doesn't work. Finally, I get up, feel around for my slippers, and decide to see if Ruby's at the desk knitting or something. Outside each dorm room, near the floor, are a pair of childproof nightlights. I think about telling Ruby that this makes the hallway look like an airport landing strip. She'll like that. We'll talk. After that, I'll be able to sleep. Down at the end of the hall, Rochelle is at her post, on the lookout for late-night barfers and illegal laxative users. As I pass Becca's room, something in the dim glow of the nightlight catches my eye. It's Ruby, sitting on the edge of Becca's bed. I decide to wait for her so I can tell her about the landing strip. Ruby glances up, gives me a half-worried, half-annoyed look. I shrink back against the wall, then tiptoe back to my room and count the snowflakes until, somehow, it's morning and Sydney's making her bed. The cafeteria is more insane than usual. Maybe it's the snow, maybe it's the pancakes. The clatter and the laughing and the talking are worse than ever. I'm in line, waiting for my breakfast, when Debbie cuts in front of me. She's apparently back for seconds. An empty, syrup-streaked plate is in her hand.
"What's taking so long?" she yells over the counter to a kitchen worker in a hairnet.
The woman smiles nervously. Debbie hands her plate across the counter.
"I need more," she says.
By the time I get my juice and sit down, Debbie's almost finished. Tara's sitting across from her, watching, practically terrified, as Debbie eats one mouthful of pancake after another. Amanda regards Debbie with something like awe.
"Where's Becca?" Sydney says.
No one answers. Debbie keeps chewing as if she hasn't heard.
"Deb?" says Sydney. "Where's Becca?"
"Infirmary."
Debbie sounds bored, matter of fact. She doesn't look at Sydney. She stares at some spot on the far wall. Tara sets her juice glass down slowly.
"What's the matter with her?"
Debbie doesn't answer. She chews, scoops up another piece, pops it in her mouth.
"Debbie?"
Tara looks like she's going to cry.
"Debbie," says Sydney, "what's wrong?"
She shrugs.
"Is it her heart?"
Tara says. Debbie gets to her feet hurriedly. Her lower lip is quivery.
"I don't know."
She grabs her tray and storms away. Our table goes quiet. Then there's a flurry of talking.
"I bet it's another heart attack," Tara says.
Sydney drapes an arm around Tara's shoulders.
"Don't worry," she says. "It can't be that bad if Becca's only in the infirmary. She'd be in the hospital if it were serious."
Tiffany agrees, reaches in her ever-present purse and hands Tara a tissue. Amanda rocks back in her chair and smiles.
"Intense," she says with admiration. "That Becca chick is really intense."
I feel for the loose strip of metal at the edge of the table, bending it a little. With no warning, it breaks off in my hand. Everyone is so busy worrying about Becca, they don't look at me. It's an accident, this thing snapping off into my hand, but I slip it in my pocket, just in case. The chimes ring. It's hard to leave. "Remember that girl in my group I told you about?" I say as soon as you close your door.
"Which one?" you say.
Becca, the really skinny girl, the anorexic who's still throwing up? You nod. She.
I.
Hot tears start to well up in my eyes. You become a blur of colors.
Something's wrong.
I look out the window, shading my eyes with my hands like the sun's too bright.
What is it, Callie?
I steal a glance at you. Your hands are pressed together in a praying gesture.
Tell me, please.
We don't know what's wrong, I say, suddenly conscious that I've used the word we. I can't go on. She might have had another heart attack, I say finally, the words coming out in stop-start bursts. You slide the tissue box across the carpet and leave it at my feet.
Can you tell me why you're so upset?
No. I feel foggy again, lost. I really can't. You lean back.
Would you feel better if I tell you what I know?
I nod, vaguely startled and yet not surprised somehow that you would know what's going on with the girls in my group.
It wasn't a heart attack, you say.
I sit forward and wait for you to tell me more.
The doctor said she did have an irregular heartbeat last night,
you say,
and some palpitations.
She didn't have a heart attack? I need to be sure.
No. They think she was probably just dehydrated.
From throwing up?
That's a good possibility.
I wad up a tissue, throw it in the trash can, and grab another one. So she's going to be okay?
You blow out a long, steady stream of air. I can't say. She will be if she begins taking responsibility for her health, for her recovery here. If she doesn't...
Your voice trails off. Debbie was really upset, I say.
Debbie?
The girl who takes care of her.
How could you tell?
She was eating pancakes, I say. A lot of pancakes. I picture Debbie at the breakfast table, shoveling food into her mouth, and it dawns on me that seeing her eat like that might have grossed me out before, or annoyed me, or maybe even secretly pleased me. Now it just makes me sad.
How do you feel?
Me? I don't know. You don't seem completely satisfied with this answer. Tara, she was upset too. I want to talk about Debbie, about Tara, about everybody else. The new girl, I say. She's weird. You cock your head slightly. It was like she was happy it happened.
Callie, you say. What about you? How do you feel about what Becca did?
Your eyes flick toward the clock, making a quick check. Without really thinking, I pat the outside of my pocket, feeling for the metal strip, telling myself it's there if I need it. How do I feel? I feel like cutting. I don't know why. And I don't tell you. Everyone's already there when I get to group. The only chairs left are Becca's old seat and the one next to Debbie. Debbie's eyes are bloodshot, her eyelids painted with blue eyeshadow, and her face is powdery white. She's obviously been crying. I slide into the chair next to her. Claire starts off by saying that it looks like Becca's going to be okay, but that she'll have to be in the infirmary for a while.
She didn't have a heart attack,
says Tara. Is she coming back? Says Sydney.
Can I have a room?
Says Tiffany. Claire takes off her glasses and rubs the bridge of her nose. Becca hasn't been eating. She was hiding her food, then throwing it away, she says. She holds her glasses up to the light, rubs out a smudge with a tissue. She's also been throwing up what little she did eat. Now, she says, putting her glasses back on, what we need to talk about in this group are your feelings about Becca's actions. Tiffany chews on her nails. Debbie chews her gum. I chew my lip. Then the room is quiet. So quiet we can hear the muffled sound of voices from the group next door. No volunteers? Claire says at last. Okay, we'll go around the circle. My heart hammers. We've never done this before. What will happen when it's my turn?
Tiffany, why don't you go first? Claire says. I breathe out. Tiffany's 4 seats away from me. Tiffany rolls her eyes, adjusts her purse strap.
It pisses me off, she says. I don't know why, it just does.
She turns to Tara. Tara shrugs. Then she starts crying. She throws her hands up and turns toward Amanda. My heart beats double time. 2 more people and it'll be my turn.
I didn't know her that well, Amanda says. I mean, I don't know her that well. It's not like she's dead or anything.
She flashes a cocky smile around the circle. But how did you feel about it? Claire says.
Feel? Oh, I think it raised some issues for me. Fear of abandonment, self-loathing, repressed hostility, that sort of thing. Is that what you're looking for?
Claire purses her lips. Her gaze travels to Sydney. Sydney, how about you?
Sydney's next to me, but I can hardly hear her. My heart is pounding so hard.
It bugged me.
Sydney's voice cracks. She clears her throat. It bugged me that she's, you know, doing that to herself. How could she do that to herself?
She starts crying, then turns to me. I survey the circle. Tara gives me a teary smile from under the brim of her baseball cap. Amanda eyes me suspiciously. I pick at a hangnail. Then Debbie leans over.
You don't have to say anything, Callie.
She looks around the group.
Right, everyone?
Why can't you leave people alone? Says Tiffany. Why can't you let her decide if she wants to talk? You're so worried about her, about trying to make sure she doesn't have to talk. I think you're the one who doesn't want to talk about it.
Debbie ignores her, turns to Claire.
She doesn't have to talk if she doesn't want to, does she?
Claire sighs. That's up to Callie, she says. Callie, are you ready to talk today?
Come on, ST,
Sydney whispers. I pull at the hangnail. Words take shape in my brain, a few, then a flood. Then they're gone. I shake my head, a little at first, then harder, as I watch my hair swing from side to side. Okay, says Claire. Debbie? Debbie's arm brushes mine as she shifts in her chair. There's silence, then the sound of more talking next door, then more silence.
Scared.
I have to look out of the corner of my eye to make sure it's Debbie talking. Debbie, says Claire, what is it you're afraid of? Debbie wrings her shirt in her hands. I don't move.
You're all going to be mad at me.
Why do you think that? Says Claire. Debbie shrugs. Her arm brushes mine again. It's soft and pillowy. I relax my grip a little. Debbie? Claire says in a gentle voice. Can you look at me a minute? We all look at her. Why would we be angry with you? Debbie twists her shirt into a knot.
I should have tried to stop her.
People shift in their seats. Someone across the room coughs, then nothing. Tara raises her hand finally.
You couldn't have known what she was doing.
I should have.
Debbie looks around the group.
I know that's what you all think. I know you all hate me. You hate me for not taking care of Becca. I know it.
No one says anything. Debbie plows her fists into her thighs.
It's not fair. I try to do what people want. At home, I do all the things no one else wants to do. I sort the recyclables. I clean the litter box. I do the wash.
There's a long silence.
Why?
Says Sydney. Her voice is soft, curious. Debbie shrugs.
Why do you do things people don't even ask you to?
Debbie shakes her head.
I don't know.
She sounds exhausted.
I really don't.
She sighs a long, tired sigh. When she's finished, the room is quiet again. She sinks back into her chair, her arm resting against mine. I don't move away. It's not your fault. The words come out of my mouth. I aim them at my lap, but they're for Debbie, from me. I can hear people squirming in their chairs. Then the room is quiet again. I peer out from under my hair and take in the circle of feet. Everyone is wearing sneakers, except Amanda, who has on combat boots. Debbie turns to look at me.
"What did you say?"
she whispers. "It's not your fault," I say. "About Becca." I keep my eyes on Amanda's boots. Her legs are crossed and she's swinging her foot up and down. "It's mine." Amanda stops swinging her foot. My voice gives out. I clear my throat. "I saw her. One time I saw her put her brownie in a napkin. And in the bathroom, I knew she was throwing up." I lean back in my chair, feeling trembly and very, very tired. The silence is long and loud, with things people aren't saying. I can't stand to look up and see their faces, to see how angry they are. Footsteps echo in the hallway. They get louder and louder, then faint, then fainter. Then they trail away.
"Hey, ST,"
Sydney says finally. I don't budge. She nudges me with her elbow.
"You want to know something?"
I still can't look up, but I nod.
"It's not your fault either."
She says this like it's no big deal, like it's nothing. But it's everything. Group is over then, and people are standing, gathering up their books, heading to their appointments. I keep my head down, grip the edge of my chair, and hold on like my life depends on it. I don't know what just happened in here, but I can't leave.
"ST?"
It's Sydney's voice.
"You coming?"
She's standing in front of me. Debbie's there too. And Tara. And Claire. A semicircle of feet. A weird strangling sound starts in my chest, then comes out my mouth. I'm crying. Sobbing, actually, and gulping for air. I wipe my eyes. The feet are still there. But the crying won't stop. I'm shaking and trying not to shake, but it's no good. I can't stop. Claire says something about going to get help. Finally, a pair of white shoes pushes through the semicircle. Ruby's there, rubbing my back, saying,
"There, there, baby. It's all right. It's going to be all right."
Then you're standing there, in your little fabric shoes, saying the same thing. That it's all right now. You shut your door. I notice that it's getting dark outside and wonder if you'd be home walking your dog or making your dinner right now if I hadn't freaked out.
"Can you tell me what upset you so much in group?"
I shrug. "Debbie." It's all I can say.
"How did Debbie upset you?"
"No," I blow my nose. "Debbie didn't do anything. I rip the tissue in two and start again. "She thought it was her fault. About Becca." I don't dare to look at you.
"I thought it was my fault,"
I whisper. I glance at you, then away. You look worried.
"I think everything's my fault."
"What else is your fault?"
"I don't know. Everything. Sam."
"Sam?"
"It's my fault he's sick, which means it's my fault my mom's not the same anymore and my fault my dad's not around. It's all my fault."
"Callie, your voice is gentle.
How can all those things be your fault?" "I don't know. They just are."
"How is it your fault that Sam is sick?"
"I made him cry. I got him upset."
I've always taken this for granted. As I say it out loud, though, it sounds stupid. "Callie, I'm a doctor," you say. "If I tell you that a person doesn't get asthma from crying, from being upset, will you believe me?" I shrug. "Asthma is a kind of allergic reaction. People can develop it when they come in contact with certain substances like pollen or dust. Sometimes a viral infection can trigger an attack.
But you can't give asthma to someone. The allergic response is already in their system.
The fog is clouding my mind again. What you're saying sounds like something from biology class. It doesn't have anything to do with me or Sam or my mom being scared all the time and my dad being gone all the time. I look for the rabbit on the ceiling but can't quite find him.
Has anyone told you all these things are your fault? You interrupt.
No one has to. I just know.
Does anyone punish you for these things?
I shake my head.
No one?
I look up at you. You still look concerned.
What about you? Aren't you punishing yourself? By hurting yourself?
I don't understand.
No.
Then why do you think you cut yourself?
I don't know.
I tear the tissue to shreds.
It just happens. I can't help it.
You furrow your brow.
I know it's bad, I say. I guess I do it because I'm bad.
How are you bad?
I don't know. I just feel like I'm this bad person.
What have you done that's so bad?
I don't know.
As soon as I say it, I know it's the truest thing I've ever said.
I really don't know.
You look pleased and say that's enough for one day. Right before dinner, there's always a crowd of people on the smoking porch. As I go past, Sydney taps on the glass door. I stop and watch as she gestures for me to come out. Before I can decide what to do, she grinds out her cigarette and comes in to get me.
Come on, ST, she says, grabbing my arm. Come outside with us.
I pull my sleeve down over my thumb and follow, trying to match her big strides as her ponytail bobs up and down in front of me.
Guess I can't call you ST anymore.
She waits at the door for me to catch up.
Now that you're talking.
It's okay, I say. You can still call me that. There's a blast of cold, smoky air as Sydney opens the door. I step onto the porch, take in the curious looks of the other girls, and jam my hands into my pockets.
Want one?
Sydney waves a pack of cigarettes in front of me. I shake my head and watch the careful way she lights up, cupping her hand around the match to keep it from blowing out.
My favorite addiction, she says, blowing out a fat white smoke ring.
Tiffany wanders over.
Does anybody else think it's weird that we're allowed to smoke here? She says.
Sydney admires her smoke ring as it floats away.
Yeah, she says. No barfing, no binging, no inhaling fumes from the art supplies, but smoking's okay.
The other girls laugh, and I feel the corners of my mouth turn up. I lift my sleeve to my mouth, but the smile stays as they make jokes about the rules, about the food, about group. It's cold outside, and I wonder why no one ever wears a coat at Sick Minds. Mostly, though, I test out what it feels like to smile again. I'm so tired that night that I fall asleep in my clothes. I'm sitting up in bed reading a story for English, and the next thing I know, Ruby's leaning over me, telling me it's almost lights out.
You want to put this on?
She's holding one of my nightgowns. Then she's gone, her shoes squeaking down the hall. The room is dark. Sydney's on her back, sleeping. I get up slowly, then make my way down to the bathroom. Rochelle's in her chair, and Amanda's standing at the sink, although I hardly recognize her. She's washed off all her makeup, her pencil-arched brows, her black eyeliner, her red lipstick, and she looks very young. She's studying her face in the mirror, so she doesn't notice me right away. When she does, she scowls. I find a corner, turn my back, and begin the process of getting undressed for the shower without letting her see me. First, I unhook my bra, tug the straps down, and pull it off from under my shirt. Then, I drape the towel over my shoulders and take off my shirt, quickly pulling the towel around me toga style as my shirt falls to the floor. Next, I step out of my jeans, holding the towel in place with one hand and tugging my pants off with the other. I'm balanced on one foot, kicking off my pants leg when something metal hits the tile floor with a tiny plink. The metal strip from the dining room table. I'd forgotten it was still in my pocket. Instinctively, I slide my foot across the tile, covering the piece of metal. Rochelle's head bobs up, but she looks in the wrong direction, over at the toilet stalls. But Amanda turns quickly toward me. She takes in my awkward position, the towel gripped to my chest, one foot half stuck inside my pants leg, the other stretched out uncomfortably far away across the floor. Then she nods slowly, approvingly. "Rochelle," she calls out, still looking at me. "Is there anyone down at the desk? I need something." I'm too startled to move. Is she going to tell on me, get me in trouble? Rochelle's gotten up. She's banging the toilet stall doors open one by one, checking to make sure no one's in there. When the last stall turns up empty, she gives Amanda an annoyed look. "What do you need this time of night?" Amanda smiles at me, then turns to face Rochelle. "A tampon." I don't understand. Then I do. Amanda's sending Rochelle off on a fake errand so I can pick up the metal strip and hide it. Rochelle sighs. "You two aren't food disorder girls, right? You're not going to throw up if I leave for a minute." We nod almost in unison. "Okay," she says. "I'm trusting you. No funny business." We nod. Rochelle leaves. Amanda is next to me all of a sudden. I slide my foot back and the metal strip is lying there on the floor between us. "Where'd you get it?" she says. "The dining room table. It broke off." "Gutsy," she says. "Real gutsy." She seems so delighted at the sight of the strip, I think maybe she's going to take it. I picture myself grabbing it and just dropping it in the trash can right in front of her. Instead, I pick it up, close my fingers around it, and head for the shower before Rochelle comes back. The hairs on my neck tingle, as if Amanda might grab me at any minute and pry the metal strip out of my hand. But she doesn't. I turn the water on high and listen while Amanda thanks Rochelle for the tampon. A toilet stall door opens, closes, then opens again, and I hear Amanda call out goodnight in a sing-song voice. Slowly, I take off my towel, wrap the metal strip in it, and get in the shower. When it's time to go back to my room, I put the piece of metal back in my pants, folding them carefully so it doesn't fall out. I'll figure out what to do with it later. I feel suddenly shy when I sit down across from you in your office today. Something happened between us yesterday, and I don't quite know how to come back from it. You smile, and a good warm feeling comes over me. I settle into the cushions of the couch, deciding that I'll work hard today, try to come up with the right answers to your questions. "How are you?" you say. "Fine." This is true, but it sounds inadequate. I give you a practice smile. You smile back. "Callie," you say, folding your hands around your knees, "what you did yesterday, speaking out in group, that was a big step." "It was?" I want to hear more. "It took a lot of courage." My cheeks get warm, an uncomfortable and at the same time not uncomfortable feeling. "How did it feel to speak in front of the other girls?" "Okay." I try to come up with a better answer. "A little scary, I guess." "What were you afraid of?" "That people would get mad at me?" You nod. "Who did you think would be angry?" "I don't know," I say. "Everybody?" "Everybody?" I shrug. The foggy feeling settles over me. I want to give you a right answer, but I don't have one. "Let me ask you this. Do people get angry with you a lot?" "Not really." You wait. "My mom cries a lot, but she doesn't yell or anything," I say. "And your father?" I chew on a hangnail. "He doesn't get too worked up," I say finally. A car tire spins on the ice outside. "I've noticed that you don't talk about your father much." My leg muscles tighten. I feel ready to run. I cross and recross my legs, trying hard to just stay in my seat.
So, I say.
What can you tell me about him? You say.
Don't you have stuff in your file? I say after a while.
I don't really know much about him. I met with your mother on visiting day, but your dad wasn't here.
He has to work. I remember scanning the parking lot for him, watching somebody's dad come up the sidewalk, banging on the window, and realizing it wasn't him.
You tap your file.
He's a computer salesman, is that right?
Your file makes it sound like he works at Radio Shack. For some reason, this makes me mad.
He sells computers to companies. He takes people out to dinner and stuff to get them to buy whole big computer systems.
You don't seem to understand.
He has to travel.
You still don't say anything.
Well, he used to. Travel, I mean. Since Sam got sick, he changed jobs. Now he just sells to companies nearby.
I don't tell you about how it seems like all the companies nearby already have computers, that for a while he took people out hoping they'd become customers, and that now he mostly just goes out.
He has to work a lot.
Is that why he wasn't here for visiting day?
A muscle in my leg is twitching. My heart is hammering against my ribs. All I want to do is jump off the couch and run. I cross my legs again, winding one around the other to keep them still. I don't feel like talking about this anymore. I draw my mouth into a straight line and bite my lip. Somehow, some of the good warm feeling from yesterday is gone.
Callie?
I chew on my lip a little harder now.
Callie, you're biting your lip.
I meet your eyes for a second, then look out the window at the bare branch of the tree.
Do you know the expression, bite your lip?
I guess so.
Tell me what you think it means.
You know, I say, my eyes locked on the branch. To shut up. To not say something.
To not say something.
You recite my words. I go back to biting my lip. Your dead cow chair groans as you lean forward.
Callie, I feel like there's something you're not saying.
Now everything good from yesterday is gone. We're in the middle of group, and Tiffany is telling us about some guy she had sex with behind the dumpster at her school. She's saying something about how it's his fault she's at Sick Minds because he told his friends, who told some of her friends, who told the health teacher, who Tiffany then had to beat up. The door opens. We all turn to see who it is. It's Becca. Becca is being pushed in a wheelchair by an actual nurse, someone in a white uniform. Tiffany stops mid-sentence. Claire nods.
Welcome back, Becca, she says.
Becca wiggles her finger hello.
Hi, everybody, she says.
No one says anything.
Becca's going to continue working with our group, Claire says carefully. And eventually we hope she'll be back with us full time, but for the time being she's staying on another ward.
We all know what this means. Humdinger. Becca giggles. Everyone else squirms. The nurse wheels Becca's chair into a space next to Amanda. Amanda nudges her chair aside a little, then folds her arms across her chest and looks sideways at Becca. The nurse locks the brakes on the wheelchair and leaves. Dead quiet.
You look good, someone says finally.
It's Sydney. Her voice is shaky. Her eyes dart nervously around the circle. Becca makes a gagging gesture, sticking her tongue out and pointing a finger down her throat.
They tube-fed me,
she grins sheepishly. There's another long silence.
You don't think I look fat?
Becca giggles again. Debbie jumps out of her chair and heads for the door.
No, Debbie, says Claire. You need to stay here.
Debbie turns around. Her jaw is clenched. A vein is pulsing in her neck. Claire is pointing to Debbie's empty chair. Debbie harumphs across the room and flops into her seat. No one moves. Becca flips her hair over her shoulder.
So what? She says. Are you guys mad at me or something?
Sydney coughs. Then nothing.
Yes,
comes a tiny voice from across the circle.
It's Tara. She's looking out at Becca from under her baseball cap. Becca grins like she can't believe it, like it's a big joke.
Why?
She says.
I'm okay, see?
She clamps her teeth together and smiles hard. No one says anything.